This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Big the Nation, episode 273.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we loudly proclaim that no, I haven't seen Squid Game yet. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and I really don't understand how people have already finished an entire series that just came out. Is it just me and my time management skills? Like, what is happening? All right, today, we're not going to talk about Squid Game, because like I said, I haven't fucking seen it. Today, we're going to talk about Andrew Yang, New Zealand, space. We'll also talk about the quest for internet fame. Gross. But we're going to keep it fun. And you know why and how we're going to keep it fun? Oh my God, with this panel. This is the kind of panel where I can basically phone it in and like just tune out and they can just do the show. You know what I mean? That's how awesome this panel is. It's like a host dream panel. So joining us for the umpteenth time, he's one of our favorites. He's host of the Political Orphanage. He's one of the few Fake the Nation panelists that's like somewhere else on the political spectrum than where I am. And he's so delightful about it. It is the wonderful Andrew Heaton. Hey, Andrew.
Hello. It is delightful to be back and absolutely splendid to be the palatable non-progressive that is trotted out to be charming with you.
And I am also joined. We're also trotting out someone with whom I'm aligned very much on many things, like watching her and laughing at her jokes that she thinks were funny when she wrote them, and it turns out everybody thinks were funny because she's so damn funny. I've seen her do this all over the country. She has a comedy album coming out next month called Plant-Based Jokes, which you should absolutely be on the lookout for. But you've seen her on Comedy Central. You know her from shows like Ask Me Another, the recently departed Ask Me Another on NPR. She is just, she's done it all. And she is the one and only Ophira Eisenberg. Hey, Ophira.
Well, hello. And I'll be the judge, Andrew, as to how palatable you are.
There's a lot of pressure riding on me. Apparently, Nagin can just sit back and I also have to be likable. I'm glad I drink some coffee.
I was like, this will be the hardest lift for Nagin of all time. Just you wait, because you set it up like that.
I know,
just
a fear
of shooting
like
diamonds out of her eyes at me quietly.
You guys
and
are just
going to
give
constantly.
Me yes or no answers to everything. That's what's going to happen this
Agreed.
Episode.
Please like me. Agreed. This is what I think.
Oh, I fucked up so hard. Also, Ophira happens to know how to keep orchids alive. And that's something, now that I'm looking at you, keep remembering. I need to send you a photo of an orchid that I'm dealing with.
Yes, I'm just...
I have half a poinsettia.
Half a poinsettia? You know, it is kind of interesting keeping poinsettias out of season. It's totally possible. They go green and supposedly they come back to red.
I think you can make them red again by like putting them in your like windowless bathroom or something.
That's right,
for
darkness.
Like 12 hours of the
darkness.
Day.
Darkness. Basically,
just torture my plant that it'll bloom.
Torture your poinsettia. Yeah.
The gross rule of nature is that as soon as something is threatened, it blooms.
And what HeadGum doesn't know is that Fake the Nation is now a plant show. So this is all we're talking about for the rest of the show. Okay, now before we get into it, I want to remind people to join us on Patreon. We just uploaded a brand new bonus episode. It's on the Unwritten Rules of Life with Christian Finnegan and Selena Kopic. And oh my God, it's so fun and funny and ridiculous. And I hope that you join Patreon. And I like to point out to people, if you like the show, if you enjoy the show, and you want to keep it going, you support it, you can do that for as little as $1. You can get bonus episodes for as little as $4. That's like an Americano, you know what I mean? An Americano with a little steamed milk for every month. If you want to buy me one of those, you can essentially do that through Patreon. So go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad and see what all the fuss is about. But early reports on the Unwritten Life Rules episode is that it was hilarious. So there's your teaser there. Let's get into it with topic number 0.5, because we talked about Facebook on an episode that you guys were not on. Apologies, you're not on every episode.
You had shows without me?
I know. I'm so sorry.
I thought this was this is the pilot episode.
Yeah. Isn't this show quarterly? This comes out more than four times a year?
So guys, there was a Facebook, where we're recording today on a Wednesday. Yesterday on Tuesday, there was a Facebook whistleblower that took Congress by storm, basically pointing out to everybody that, hey, if you thought Facebook was making choices that were bad for the country and bad for humanity, i.e. letting people go run wild with misinformation about vaccines, letting people run wild with misinformation about elections, letting algorithms continue to dish out terrible, wrong information. If you thought Facebook was letting that happen and knew that they were letting it happen because it made people stay on the site longer, and I'm talking about Facebook and Instagram, that is correct. They were doing that. They were doing that because it could make more, I guess, money.
What?
Are you saying
this is driven by money?
Isn't that weird? I just had no idea. But so we don't, you know, we talked about the Instagram aspect of Facebook a few weeks ago about how they knew that girls especially were really being targeted in a negative way and had a lot of negative psychological outcomes because of the, you know, the material on Instagram, and that teenagers in general had a hard time, even though Instagram made them feel bad, had a hard time literally getting themselves off of it. They knew. So we talked about that. And now we have this whistleblower just talking about everything about Facebook. Just quickly, your thoughts on this, Ophira.
Yeah, I mean, I think just underlining the idea that, it, you know, someone had to say, by the way, it is bad. And like that was a surprise. Surprise.
right.
Oh, wow. Someone just came in with new evidence. I mean, this is what everyone has been saying and feeling. And, you know, we always are talking about taking breaks for social media all through the pandemic. We told people to get off of it because it was destroying people. Doom scrolling is a little phrase that we use all the time now to represent a deeply upsetting emotional state we get in purely from scrolling through social
all the
media.
All the time.
We know what happened with the election. We know anti-vaxxers who are quoting someone's profile rather than the research they did at Johns Hopkins University Library.
Yep.
Would like to just say this just in, murder kills.
Right. The obvious is being reinforced over and over. Heaton, a quick question for you, which is that, you know, where you are on the political spectrum, you have more nuanced positions on where regulation falls when it comes to companies like this. Basically, do you think Facebook should be regulated, knowing what you know now that murder kills and that Facebook has been not nice?
That is a great question. And may I phrase that slightly differently?
Please.
Should Facebook be regulated by one of Donald Trump's golf buddies? Because that's going to happen every 4 years. And that's the thing that concerns me. I think that all media companies should be subject to libel laws and anything that's violating, inciting literal violence, that kind of thing. When we start getting into the realm of the government playing PolitiFact, that strikes me as pretty dangerous. I would rather people just kind of wean themselves off social media culturally rather than trying to have a hard-ended political solution to it. It's weird for me. Like, I have a history major, and everything we know from history is based off of basically broken pottery and letters people left behind, which means that 500 years from now, people are going to go, they're going to look at Facebook, and that's going to be our journal of record from the 21st century. And they'll go, in the 21st century, people hated Mondays. and each other, but they loved cats right. and Taylor Swift, and it'll be this horrid thing. But yeah, suffice it to say, I'm pretty skeptical of the government getting in there, and I worry about a nefarious actor being able to put their finger on the scales if they did so.
Why don't we have a reality okay. show where we have to choose who will regulate Facebook? That's
well, and great. By the way, I also feel like in terms of nefarious political actors, there can also be independent boards that are not subject to the whims and fancies of political parties that can help come up with these kinds of regulations so that we don't need to worry about Donald Trump's buddy being the guy that does it. But maybe he's one of, 19 people on a board of like actually smart people. And I don't think it should be politicians, by the way. I think it should be an independent board that figures out what to do.
Possibly,
blah, blah, blah.
But it does raise a couple of questions that also are a little worrisome to me, because the thought process there, I think, is, well, what if we just remove democracy from it and just had like somebody that's unelected be appointed to do it? That concerns me somewhat, particularly if we're dealing with things like public squares. I also suspect that you would have kind of biases creep in that if you have a group of sort of permanent public servants that are doing it, they're going to come from one particular
election
strain.
What I'm hearing
strain.
From you, Heaton, is that you want all teenage girls to suffer forever that's, from Instagram. That's
here's the thing.
Hearing.
I actually own a lot of makeup companies that target 15-year-olds, and I want to keep staying on that gravy train.
All right. Well,
I just want to go
okay,
back to
wrap
like,
it up for
poking.
Us, Ophira.
No, I just want to
oh, yeah,
just go back to the, I mean, the, you know, whatever
oh,
we call it.
Those
like,
were
you
the
know,
simple days.
Yeah, and like, you know, what... My relationship is complicated, like all of that.
Oh, I remember
ridiculous.
When that was like crazy when someone wrote that. Oh, yeah. We're so more horrible now. We're so much more horrible now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let us move on. We have to move on to the next topic, which is space stuff. So William Shatner is going to space. He's 90. He's not an astronaut, but he sort of played one on a TV. He's a product mm-hmm. of the new space tourism industry. And for the bargain basement price of $28 million, you too can get a ticket to space. By the way, that number, it's actually confusing to figure out how much these tickets actually are. There isn't like a streamlined fee yet. So
we can't go on the website and just book one? We actually
no,
have to call
yeah,
somebody
and like
negotiate?
No, yeah, it's all like kayak.space.
I like using Hipmunk for my space travel.
Well, okay, so before we like get into
7 a.m., is there a later flight?
Wait a minute, I'm going to the moon, but I have to go through Chicago? How's that work? Can't we just go directly from Earth?
But again, you have to pay more for comfort. The comfort
it says if we wait till October, it's cheaper. Let's just
So where do you land on a scale of like, I'm desperate to go to space and I give no shits about going to space? Where are you guys on that, Ophira?
Well, you know, I would like to go to space, sure. But the thing that I find troubling about what's going on right now, first of all, it's kind of yeah. funny. I have a small child. I have a boy. He has said to me before, when I grew up, maybe I want to be an astronaut. And I've had to correct him and right. say, no longer a goal. That's you just have to be rich, or actually maybe you should be an actor. That seems to be the line to follow.
Right.
But I do, you know, right now where I see things in terms of a bit of a pecking order, because I think there's a lot of people out there who really would like to go to space, who are maybe studying things related to a future in going out to space or science. And maybe all of those people who are like passionate about it should go before an actor who played a captain, not an astronaut. You are completely correct with that, Nagin.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, he's obviously going because it's like a hilarious, it's a advertisement, right? It's an
well,
advertisement.
Well, I think also it's an advertisement, and I think Bezos is a William Shatner fan. It's sure. on Blue Origin that he's going.
Well, wait
and by
till
the way,
they spend
here,
a lot of time together. Just
that's why it's only well, going to be like 10 minutes, I think. They figured, oh, this is going to be grating. We need to make sure, don't let the old guy die. That's the top one. That's we right. don't want the old dude to die. So we're going to limit it to 10 minutes. So there's very low chances of a heart attack. And if it happens, we just won't tell anybody. Like I bet you they've got a contingency plan
that's
of
hilarious.
Like, he's going to die 2 days later. If he dies 2 days later, it means he died in space.
Yeah, can we like lock one of those doors whoop, and then just lock it like they did on Star Trek?
Oh, God.
No, and I know this is like what I'm saying. saying is very simplified right now, but it just, it strikes me as so unfair that there is someone out there that is dying to go through to space and has the training, and William Shatner's going to go. Like, that just kills me.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but I think, but that's the idea, right? Is that space tourism is about the everyman like William Shatner. But I also want to point out, though, if you're like, you joke about actors, but there's, in a historic first, Russia is also launching an actor and a film director into space to make a feature film or complete aspects of a feature film in orbit. The project is the nation's, you know, first chance to sort of raise the prestige of Russia's space program, which we've like largely, you know, forgotten about.
Yeah.
And then here's, so the Russian state, like the head of the state space corporation, Roscosmos, said this funny thing, which he said, what did he say here? Sorry, as I try to figure this out. He said that the new film is going to help counter what he described as the Western efforts to, quote, humiliate the Russian space program.
Wait, is William Shatner our new Cold War? Like we got like Jeff Bezos met with the president and he's like, listen, it would really piss off Vladimir Putin if you could get either George Takei or William Shatner in a tin can to orbit the Earth.
That's amazing.
It's our Sputnik.
It's like, Russia, this like song is not about you. You know what I mean? It's, why do you think everything is about you?
Yeah, like Vladimir Putin, we're literally shooting Star Trek actors into space. Just enjoy the moment right now.
Wait till you see our space movie.
We could have picked Walter Koenig. He played Chekhov and he could do a cute Russian accent and like talk about all that stuff and it'd still be fun.
Well, so one of the things that's happening outside of the Russia situation, which is so weirdly actor and movie focused, I just don't understand it. But what's happening really is that between, you know, Blue Origin and SpaceX and Virgin Galactic, because all of those guys, you know, are have their space programs, is that there's a little bit of a race between billionaires. How does that make you feel, Heaton?
I'm thrilled by all of these developments. This is, so I woke up with a text message that William Shatner's going into space, and I went, yes, capitalism did it again. We're doing it again. I think this is fantastic. I think, Ophira, you bring up a good point that a lot of people are not going to go into space who rightly should enjoy that honor and that prestige, and a lot of other people won't. I will hopefully be one of those people. There's no reason I will ever be sent into space based on merit, but I might get to go into space because I become ironically hip in my 70s. This is the closest way that I'll ever get up there. But I think this is really, really great. So I'm a huge NASA fan. No offense to NASA when I say this, but I think that in terms of the really innovative stuff happening for people just on Earth rather than kind of basic scientific inquiry, that's all happening in the private sector right now.
Right.
And there's basically three ways that that's going to get pushed out there. It's either going to be through porn, through defense contracts, or through billionaires trying to one-up each other. And I'm fine with that. And I think this is kind of comparable to like when planes were being invented. And we're now getting to the point where it's being expanded from test pilots and scientists to people in business suits
anyone,
that get to fly
anyone.
From
yeah.
London to New York.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping a lot World of people go. I want a lot of people to go to space. Like, I'm happy to make that list.
Why? Oh, wait. So
do you want us to come back?
So hold on, Ophir. Are you really, like, if they were to offer you a spot, you know, let's say you could just max out a credit card and go get a spot, would you do it? I mean, I just don't care. I personally don't care. I'm like, you can't breathe up there. It seems annoying. Like, I don't know. I've seen the movie Gravity starring Sandra Bullock.
Yes.
I feel like I'm good. I got it. You know?
Right. I mean, not to make it sound like a road trip, but seriously, I'm like, who else is going? What are we eating? Do we have a plan of what we're doing when we're there? Or is it just all like, let's see what happens? Like, I don't want to do that.
You get to determine who listens to what based on who's in the cockpit. You're like, Bill, you've been listening to AC/DC for an hour. I'm going to drive the spaceship. We're going to listen to Vampire Weekend. And then Janet gets a turn.
Right. Exactly.
Janet but really liked Radio Lab. Sorry.
If someone said to me, do you want to join a scientist? You know, whatever, I'm just making this up. If you want to join a scientist in space that is going to be, you know, studying a particular, galaxy's meteor, I don't know, like rocks, I would be like, that's cool. I want to be part of that. But I don't want, like, I don't know, I went to space, looked around, came back.
If I went into space with William Shatner, I would speak of nothing else for the rest of my life. You would be like, hey, how's your colonoscopy going? You know, it reminds me of the time I was in space with William Shatner. Did I mention that I was in space with William
Shatner? What's so funny, though, is that your Instagram selfies would look like they were just shot in, like, any...
In a room. In a room where you get colonoscopies. It just, you know, white background. But I was going to say, that point about the planes is accurate because, Boeing developed a bunch of planes for World War II to do some war. And then after, they were like, what if we use these for not war? And that's when they developed the 707, and that's when commercial flight became a real possibility. And also, one thing that I read when, you know, looking into this was that SpaceX, for example, does everything so much cheaper than what NASA does.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what that means. Like, you mentioned scientific inquiry, Andrew, and I'm not sure, like, if SpaceX has the same level. Because, again, if we're not talking about straight up astronauts being going up and doing work, right, which is what NASA astronauts do. They're not there. This is not about a vacay for NASA astronauts. It's about work, and it is about scientific inquiry. I'm not sure how much of that we're getting just because SpaceX can do something cheaper, you know?
Oh, no. I think there's two things that SpaceX can do that NASA can't do. So NASA is poorly situated to do really innovative stuff right now for two reasons. One, NASA, being a government agency, which again I am a fan of, is very, very risk averse for good reason. If they do something that's really interesting, like a rocket that can pick up and land, which is something that SpaceX developed that NASA's never done, like a single stage rocket that never ever happened, that was risky. That was weird, right? If they spend $1 billion on that and it blows up on the platform, the head of NASA is going to get drugged to Congress. Every congressman is going to rake him across the coals. So NASA has a very direct incentive to do very small incremental growth. It doesn't have an incentive to do innovative leaps. And the other problem is, because Congress is constantly monkeying with them, it's always going to be expensive. Because from Congress's perspective, who's their boss, the point of NASA is jobs in my district. The point of NASA is not to learn stuff. So like something that I only learned recently, which is mind-blowing to me, is when you look at the budgets, NASA has much lower percentage of the federal budget than it did when we went to the moon. And this is something that NASA justifiably brings up all the time. Of, you know, we used to have 2% of the federal budget. We put a man on the moon. Now we've got like 0.03%. But the American economy has grown so much, we actually give NASA more money in real dollars now than when we put people on the moon. They have more money at their disposal than when we did the Apollo program. But they're not doing that cool stuff anymore because it's spent in 18 different directions so that we can build lug nuts in Florida for Nelson's district, and we can do all these different things. With SpaceX and with Blue Origin, they're not held back by these things. They can be really innovative, and they can do kind of fun, cool stuff that people get excited about that propels it forward.
I just want to say, Spirit Airlines, by the way.
You know,
You know what
I
mean? Good point.
I know. Are they going to charge you for your carry-on?
I would rather take Amtrak than Spirit Airlines. That's a good point.
I want to say, I don't want to shit on NASA. They literally has done absolutely everything with space exploration up until very recently. Like, they are, you know, that they are the thing that that, like, people like Ophir's son wanted to become astronauts for. And so they really, and they did take all of the risk, and they did lose people taking that risk, right? Yeah. And so they did something amazing that now SpaceX gets to, like, pick up the mantle without having, because they have all of that institutional knowledge that NASA took decades building, right? Like, it's not, without NASA, there would be no space. It's not, you know, I don't want to give
anyone.
They did
the heavy lifting.
They did all of the heavy lifting, and then SpaceX gets to come by and be like, oh, we found a place where you can buy metal for cheaper. Like, that's annoying to me. It's not like, you know, it's just like, come on, show some respect. All right. Let us move on to learn about our sponsors. Guys, I love our sponsors because they keep the lights on here at Fake the Nation. And then when we come back, we'll talk about other things. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We are back and we're ready for topic number 73. I don't even know because we're doing a weirdly segmented show. So the big news, or not at all, is that Andrew Yang is no longer a Democrat. He formally changed affiliations and is now an independent. What do you think, Ophira?
Well, I mean, okay, on one end, on one side, of course, it just sort of looks like a sore loser, right?
yeah, a little bit, right? Yeah. It does feel that way.
But on the other hand, you know, Andrew Yang aside, I am very into a multi-party system.
Yeah.
So I really would like to see that. And I think, you know, I'm still a little sore that that guy was like, I'm from New York. Like, I'm still a little, Andrew Yang is problematic to me on a number of levels. But anything that maybe could like bring some light to that conversation, a little bit more power to that conversation of having a third party, fourth party, multi-party system, I think would be fantastic for democracy.
Heaton?
Nagin.
Yeah.
Is there a German word for positively trolling someone? Because I feel like this episode was just catnip for me. Like, I read the headlines. I was like, oh my God, you want me to talk about space policy, William Shatner and Andrew Yang? I've never been so excited. I love Andrew Yang. I have the dubious distinction of literally being if I can indulge myself and call myself a public figure, I was the last public figure to endorse him before he dropped out. I was literally the last person. And had a photo with my back back to him in James Bond style pose that he dropped out 3 hours later. Well, if there's a Wikipedia article that you put me in there.
Now we know
I'm
why.
I'm a big Andrew Yang fan. I have mixed thoughts on this. I think that it's bad for his political career. And in that capacity, I'm sorry to see him leave the Democratic Party, because I think in terms of him ever holding office, of him actually being involved in government, he would be smarter to stay within the Democratic Party. And I think that that's something that, you see with the various pressure groups that are existent in the country right now. So like libertarians have largely started withdrawing from the Republican and Democratic Party. They've formed their own thing. They don't have any electoral victories beyond like a county level. They're not a force to be reckoned with. Conversely, you look at like Social Democrats of America, of which AOC is a member, that's taken an in-house method of doing things, of like, look, we ought to be our own party. We're stuck in a two-party system. Let's work within it. I think in terms of governance and impact on day-to-day policy, that's the smart move. Now, all that being said, in terms of what he's trying to accomplish, he's being very smart, because Andrew Yang is not running or is not forming a third party and running as an independent based on you know, bread and butter issues of what corporate tax rates should be and how to expand Medicare. He's focusing on, as Ophira brought up, on ranked choice voting and open primaries, which are wonderful causes to be involved with. I think that in American politics, a lot of the time, people tend to focus on our ills resulting from villains. I think most of our ills result from bad systems. And if you have a bad system and you put in good actors, you're still going to get a bad outcome. Andrew Yang fundamentally gets that. He understands that we have a very bad incentive structure right now, and he's trying to change that. And I think he's going to have to do it from outside the two parties, because while there are good people in both parties, I'll give a shout out to Michael Bennett, a good Democrat from Colorado who's actively working on ranked choice voting himself. For the most part, the two parties don't want to change the setup. They don't like in the same way that Democrats rightly have been complaining about Republican gerrymandering for the last few years and should be alarmed about that. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party love actively suppressing any kind of challenge to their two-party duopoly, because they know that when there's only two options, they can make everybody vote out of fear and hatred. That you should vote for me because that guy's even scarier than I am. I would love to live in a system where I can actually vote for somebody I'm excited about, and I wouldn't spoil my vote. And if Andrew Yang's plans came to fruition, there would be no spoilers, and you could vote whoever you were excited
about. Yeah, because also one of the things he wants to do is, by the way, this is all, I feel like weird even talking about it, but he has a book. It's the party is called the Forward Party, and he's got a book coming out called Forward. So am I just promoting his book? Is like what's happening right now? But anyway, like what he wants to do is have open primaries, right? So that you can, your vote doesn't get spoiled. You can just vote for whoever. And I think what's interesting about that is I'm sure that like shitty actors will use it, the idea of open primaries, to fuck up who wins. And maybe through ranked choice voting, it would be harder to fuck that up. I don't know, whatever. But in theory, it might mean that we just end up with if I'm voting in a Republican primary, I'm going to vote for the John McCain type, you know, of that part, so that's the person who I'm not. Or if I want to be a shitty actor, I would vote for the craziest person, so that they have no chance against my guy. But then maybe on my side, they would also be voting for the craziest person. I don't know. There's a lot. I have a lot of questions about what an open primary means. But Ophira, you were going to say.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think those are good questions. And honestly, God, I know strategic voting is like a huge thing. I hate it so much because I feel like it just negates like the whole, any of the idealism and any of, drives me crazy. But I understand that's what you do with the system. You look at it and you figure out how to play it. But I, Andrew, it just occurred to me, like, how great would it say, vote for me, not, you know, you think I'm evil? Well, vote for me because that person's more evil.
Yeah.
That person's more evil. What about that person? That person seems like if you had a lot. Right? And it's going to just change the conversation, because then even the most limited person is going to go, well, all of those people can't be equally evil. And maybe they'll look into something.
Well, in 2016 was a great example of that phenomenon. Of 2016 was kind of historic in that it was, I think, the first election we've had where the majority of people didn't vote because they liked a person, but because they hated
the
other person.
Absolutely, exactly.
And that is not a good democratic process.
We learned something.
In situations where you have ranked choice voting, and like we should give a shout out to New York City, which has embraced this.
Hey.
I think there are counties in Massachusetts that have done it. I think Maine is doing it. In situations like that, you'll have somebody go to what is oftentimes potentially identified as a spoiler, like the Green Party or the Libertarian Party. So like a Democrat will go to the Green Party and go, I want you guys to vote Green Party. You're Green Party. You should absolutely vote Green Party. You should vote for Jill Stein. Here's what I want. I want you to put me as number two. Here's why. I, as a Democrat, have more in common with you than the Republican has. So vote Green. But put me as number two, please, because this is where – that's such a better way of approaching politics.
No, I agree. Yeah. I mean, it is – Ophira, as our resident Canadian –
well, not a resident, but yes, the past. Or,
as a fake Canadian, yeah. Expat, what is your – do they have parties? Well, a lot of parties?
A lot of parties. And because it's a parliament system – you know, those parties also will have seats in the House of Commons. So they are part of the of all of the conversation, you know, and whoever, of course, has more seats has the majority of the voice.
You get like coalition governments and things, too.
Absolutely.
And if one party gets taken over by like a Trump-like heinous person, it's not the end of the world because there you have like, you know,
the
seven
vote of
other
non-confidence.
Party options.
Right. And there's things that happen that will stop that, you know, basically if Parliament loses faith in the majority party, there will be a vote of non-confidence and then you have to go to an election.
Well, folks, let me know what you think of Andrew Yang and starting a new party. And does it worry you or does it excite you or what do you – I don't know. Am I just literally promoting some guy's book? Why? Anyways. But let me know. I do think this – the subject of like whether or not of like how to get out of this fucking system that nobody's happy. I wanted to – you know, nobody is happy. Is anyone really happy? Nobody's happy. You want to say one final thought from Heaton?
Oh, yeah. OK. So one of the things that you brought up was strategic voting. And I think part of what needs to be the process here is top five or top four options. So Alaska recently did this. So now in the state of Alaska, when they have an election for Senate, it's not going to be a Republican versus a Democrat versus whoever can get third party. It's literally going to be the top four candidates that have the vote. So everybody votes in an open primary. That's how that's going to work. You could have as many Republicans and Democrats as you want. Whoever's the top four is going to be there. What's nice, there's going to be a Republican, there's going to be a Democrat. But what's nice about that is somebody like Lisa Murkowski, who's a Republican senator who voted to remove Donald Trump after the January 6th insurrection, she knows she's going to be in that top four. So she doesn't have to cater to the crazy people in the Republican Party.
Right.
She can cater to the independents, to the sane Republicans, to the Democrats, to the moderates. And you can actually have more of a consensus candidate that comes out of that.
Right. Yeah. Throw them all in the same lump and then Lisa, someone who's like relatively reasonable on the, you know, Republican side, like Lisa Murkowski, could still win. Well, folks, let me know. Are you moved? Are you a member of the Yang Gang now, like Andrew Heaton is? I don't know. All right, let's move on to topic number 59. We're going backwards in topic numbers. Nothing makes sense anymore. So we read a piece in The New Yorker called On the Internet, We're Always Famous by Chris Hayes. And in it, he writes, I've come to believe that in the internet age, the psychologically destabilizing experience of fame is coming for everyone. Everyone is losing their minds online because of the combination of mass fame and mass surveillance increasingly channels our most basic impulses into the project of impressing strangers in ever more compulsive ways. I thought this was a really interesting piece and a great companion for the week we've had in which there was a day where there was no Facebook and Instagram. What was that, yesterday?
Glorious.
One glorious day, which might I just remind everyone a thing that everybody already knows. We can like just live like that.
But how would people find out about us?
How would people find out about the ever more compulsive ways in which we try to impress strangers?
That's right.
According to Chris Hayes. Ophir, what do you think of this piece? Because the subtitle of the piece is actually What Happens When the Experience of Celebrity Becomes Universal. Do you agree with that assessment? Where does it, with his take on what's happening, that the experience of celebrity has become universal?
I mean, it's very, I feel like this is, happening in so many different ways. First of all, let's just say in the podcasting world, I mean, there was a time, and maybe still a time, where someone would launch a podcast and someone else would go like, how do I get my podcast popular? And they were like, well, try booking a famous person.
Yep.
And then it turns out all the famous people just have a podcast.
Right.
So that's just like, is that good? Is that what's going to... So, I mean, I was thinking a lot about that, but the other day I was scrolling, before Instagram went down, I was scrolling through Instagram and I forget what kind of feed I had going on, but I was like, oh my goodness, no one is posting photos on Instagram. It's just video after video after video after video of people I don't really know. And I was just thinking this intense
need. What were they doing in those videos? Were they doing
all
that
kinds
one
of things?
Are they doing that one dance where they're like putting their hand this way and then this way and then this way?
That's right,
really
right.
Great podcasting right there. Audio to they're, explain right, what's going on. But
right,
anyways, I feel yeah.
It was mesmerizing, folks at home. I mean, it was very beguiling.
But I was just like every, you know, it just, again, my references are of a certain time, but I was like, this is Blade Runner. This is sci-fi. This is all of these things where just everyone is like, hey, look at my thing. Next person. Hey, look at my thing. Next person. Yeah. And of course, there's a lot of people that are not on Instagram, but I was just marveling that I was like, we're all making commercials. We're all making ads. And it's exhausting. And I don't even, like, it's so exhausting and nothing stands out.
About it?
And is anyone happy?
No one's happy about it. Except for, yeah.
I was just going to say, in the comparison I'm making is that it all just ends up being flat. Like, that's what I'm saying about the podcast. Like, once all the famous people also have podcasts, just sort of like, is that great because now we're on the same level? Or is it just flat and you go, I don't even, like, it's all meaningless?
Andrew, is it all meaningless?
I mean, that's really the subtitle of all of this, isn't it?
I loved this piece and thought it was a really, really well-written thought piece by Chris Hayes. I mean, I'm glad we had social media during the height of the pandemic. I'm an extrovert and a people person. I suffered pretty good emotional trauma even with it. I'm sure I would not have fared so well if it didn't. So I'm glad it's there. But I think, like, on the happiness level, I've thought about this for a long time. I think that social media is the social equivalent of potato chips. It's not a meal. You need, like, your meal, the mammal juices we get comes from interacting with people. And, you know, we've got a, what is it, the reptile brain, the mammal brain, and the neocortex. The neocortex, that is to say the logical part of my brain, knows that I'm talking to you all right now and that we're communicating. The mammal part of my brain, which is the part that shoots out all the fun juices, like endorphins and dopamine and all that, it thinks I'm looking at a piece of glass right now, the same way that a dog does. Like when you call your dog from vacation and they put it on the phone and the dog has no idea what's going on, it's because your dog has a mammal brain. It doesn't know how to contextualize that. And that's really what we're experiencing on a regular basis, where we get a little bit of a buzz out of this, but it's not the same as if we were all in the same room. And I see so many people that are it's like they're starved. They're just starved for social interaction, and they don't know why. They're like, I'm on Twitter all the time. It's like, because you're fighting with strangers that are sitting on toilets a million miles away, and you're not getting any of this into your brain. You need to go talk to them. As far as the fame element goes, I think that Chris Hayes was spot on that. I think that it messes with you. I'm like a G level celebrity. I'm way down the totem pole, so fortunately I don't have to deal with this. But I've thought about this too. I think like for an actor, I suspect the optimal level of happiness for an actor is probably a full time local regional community theater actor. And the reason I say that is you're doing what you love. Mm-hmm. You do it full time. Mm-hmm. And when you go to a restaurant, somebody comes up and goes, I saw you. You're so talented.
Yeah.
Can you talk to my kid? But you can leave the town anytime you want. No one knows who you are. Nobody's bugging you. And there's like an upper end, too. Like right now, if a million more people listen to The Political Orphanage, my show, my life would be demonstrably better. But if 30 million more people listen to it, I think it'd probably be worse.
Yeah.
Because there'd be that many people that want to ruin my life, right?
You're
so like, I think that there's a zone you want to shoot for.
But but what's weird is that now everyone is shooting for a zone, as opposed to before, the only people who were shooting for a zone were like people like the three of us. Whereas now, you know, it's like, why is my aunt on Instagram. You know what I'm saying? Like, what does she do? And I think, you know,
what's her brand? What's her aunt's brand?
What is her brand? And I think for them, they're sort of like, then it caught up in a peer pressure environment where their friends are on, literally, and I'm talking about boomers here, where they're caught up in a peer pressure environment where their friends are on and they want to see the photos of like grandchildren or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And, but then it gets, but what happens to them, and I'm not saying this happened to my aunt, I'm just saying like in general, is that everyone gets infected by this. This celebritizing of oneself, even if their actual goal is to see photos of grandchildren, you know,
right.
It's like you can't escape it, even though your intention is not about becoming famous, right? You know, our intention as comedians and podcasters is literally to sell our product, and which involves a certain level of fame, and that's understandable. But then literally what is everyone else doing except for these videos that are flattening, as you're saying?
And I would say it's one thing, like, yeah, you know, if you go into entertainment or I'll just stick with entertainment for a minute. You know, part of what you're like, I have something to express. I want a medium to express it, however that is. And then when everyone is like, wait a second, I want to express stuff too, but, you know, just because I'm part of this social media thing that tells me that I should be expressing something, you know, it's like that thing like, yeah, not everyone has to hear your thoughts. Like, it's really just comes back to that thing. It's like, hey,
which becomes insulting, right?
Yes.
Because it's like, why would you tell my aunt to just live a life? You know what I mean? Well, just live a life.
Yeah.
Why would you, you know, it's insulting to anyone that you would be like, no, but just, you don't need to post anything. And it's so complicated. And one thing that the article pointed out, which I thought was really interesting, was this moment where we used to criticize TV as the thing that was making us all really stupid. And I think this was like a little bit more before our time, where we were kids at the apex of like this kind of criticism. But he refers to George Saunders, who had written an essay, I don't know, maybe it was in the 80s or something, saying that the forms of discourse actually shape our conceptual architecture, and that the sophistication of our thinking is determined by the sophistication of the language we hear used to describe our world. So, like, you are what you eat. And it used to be that, like, we were watching TV and everyone was like, oh, uh-oh, TV's going to make everyone stupid. And then there was this moment where it seemed like, oh, the internet lets everybody talk. So maybe it'll save us from the monoculture that is television. And what happened?
The algorithm.
Yeah.
It's great. He mentions that Saunders essay, and he also mentions "Amusing Ourselves to Death" by Neil Postman, which is a great book. What Postman talks about, kind of the thesis to Postman's book, and he's writing it at the height of TV phobia. Postman says television doesn't make you stupid. People are smart enough to understand sitcoms aren't real. But he has a very, very frightening warning. He's writing in 1982, and he goes, "We're fine, but just I want to warn everybody: if we get to the point where we combine politics and entertainment, or news and entertainment, that's doomsday, because that's the point at which we train the entire American public that nothing is worth knowing unless it's amusing. That's going to be the problem." And he goes, "Just imagine. Can you imagine a presidential debate made of sound bites?
Which is what we're living in, right?
Ridiculous that
would
be."
And we don't even think it's anything wrong. We're just like, how else would you get this information? And also, could it be shorter?
Which is why the people in Congress who are the most popular are the ones who are the most well-versed. You know, AOC is popular.
Yeah.
She's brilliant. She has some really great ideas. But she's also just really good at social media.
She's a media savant. And similarly, who doesn't have great ideas, Donald Trump is a media savant. He knows how to get unearned media attention. And That is, I think, the really frustrating part of this. So like I'm as you very graciously pointed out, a nuanced thinker. So I'm not pitching for Team Red or Team Blue. I'm going to get drowned out by people that can scream, I hate the other team. The other team is evil. You're even more right than you already thought you were. Come look at the horror show that these people are. And, you know, me getting out my little slide rule going, NASA has a bigger budget than it did it before. You absolutely get drowned out because it's such a evocative and visceral medium of all of the social media we're dealing with, which means it's ultimately going to appeal to the things most visceral to us, which tend to be fear and tribalism. And so they swamp out everything else.
And I just want to close this segment with one point that he talked about, which is the surveillance effect, which we didn't even really get into. But essentially, he writes, we've all been granted a power once reserved for totalitarian governments. A not particularly industrious 14-year-old can learn more about a person in a short amount of time than a team of KGB agents could have done 60 years ago, because we are basically voluntarily putting out all of this information, then essentially turns everyone into an investigator and everyone into a target. So there's that weird thing, which you know, I hadn't really thought about, but is also a part of all of this.
There's a comedian, I can't remember who it is, so I can't attribute the joke correctly, but he talks about how he thinks Facebook was an invention of the FBI. Because it's like, hey, where you been? Who you been with? You should tag them. Let everybody know where you been.
But it's funny you say that because, you know, some like people have been arrested because they've stupidly posted on Facebook. Yep. I mean, the desire to get those likes is so intense that people have absolutely just thrown it out there. So they're like, I mean, we were watching an old movie and there was a point where someone obviously does that thing where they put a gun to the person's head to get information. And I was like, outdated. Why would you do that? Why would you go to the trouble of that? Just go on the internet. Come on now.
Hey, you're on TikTok. What's the code?
I know. I want to go back to a simpler time when putting a gun to someone's head was really the way that you handled
to get some information.
To get some information.
And then you got the information and you put the gun away, right?
Yeah. Can we just go back to those days? All right, folks. Check out this. I do highly recommend this piece. If listeners want some homework, check it out. It's really great. It's by Chris Hayes in The New Yorker. And it was just sad. But also, we can live like every day. Facebook and Instagram are down. We can live like that. All right.
How are people going to come to my shows?
No.
I mean, it's also put us in a position where...
It puts us, specifically people like us, it puts us in a shit position. I know.
I would pull out of social media. If I weren't a comedian, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
because I have to, unfortunately.
No, completely. Yeah. That's 100% how I feel. All right, folks, that is the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Great time.
Oh, my God, so fun. And I knew I didn't have to do much. You know what I mean? I knew I didn't have to do much. I was right. What I would really love, though, is for the people of Fake Nation to follow you and all of the wonderful stuff you do, track your every move in the mass surveillance system that we now live. Ophira Eisenberg, where do they do that?
You can follow me at Ophira E, OphiraE, on all the things.
All of the things. Oh, she's got the same handle.
Yeah. I know. I feel very proud of that.
And remind us again about the name of your album and that we should keep our ears open
for
that.
Yeah, you'll see it on social media. You can also go to my website, OphiraEisenberg.com, and my new album that is, it's released any day now. It's called Plant-Based Jokes.
Plant-Based Jokes, and I will let you know when the album is released. We'll make a nice announcement here on Fake the Nation so you can immediately download that album that is going to
Thank
be so
you.
Good, I absolutely assure you. Andrew Heaton, where do people find you?
You should come check me out on The Political Orphanage. Can I tell them why?
Yes, please.
So, I have interacted with some of your listeners online, and so far, this is what I figured out. They're very, very smart.
Yes.
They've got a good sense of humor,
yes.
and they lean left. Yes. That's a lot of them lean left.
Yes.
So this is the pitch I'm going to make.
Yeah, but
to
also
the,
you're
the
forgetting Mitch McConnell is a huge fan of this pod.
Yes, that's true.
Oh,
yes,
you.
He loves this pod. So
God.
For, Well, outside of Cocaine Mitch, I host a show called The Political Orphanage. It's for independence, nonpartisan thinking. I just interviewed George Will. So if there's anybody that ever listens to your show that goes, why aren't there sane conservatives? Like, I disagree with them, but I just want, like, sane, smart conservatives to exist. Where did they go? I found one. I interviewed him. His name is George Will. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for The Washington Post.
Yes, so if you want to talk,
a conversation with a smart, erudite conservative who wears cufflinks and was very anti-Trump, check out The Political Orphanage and come hang out.
I feel like the cufflinks are key to the audio experience of George Will. Definitely do that. It's such a great show. I've had the pleasure of being on that show and listening to it, and Andrew just does a phenomenal job. So definitely check out Political Orphanage. And folks, you know where to find me on all of the social medias other things. I need to start posting my whereabouts show-wise. But if you follow me on the things, at least you can know where I'm performing locally. At New York City comedy clubs, and I will also be making other announcements. I just did Wait Don't Tell Me, which I think I mentioned last week, but it's still this week's episode. And there'll be more stuff like that in the future. All right, but what I would really like to do is thank all of the people that make our show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer Danielle Jones Wesley, our sound engineer Stephanie Aguilar, and all of the fantastic people at HeadGum. Oh, and thank you to Mike for letting us record at the studio today. It is such a treat to be in person at a studio, my God. And our theme music was written by Gabby Alter. And as always, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. I'm going to go back to reading your reviews next week, so keep them coming, and I'm going to read them on air and just take a moment and say what you can about Fake the Nation on Apple Podcast. You can email us at fakethenation@headgum.com. Join the Patreon at patreon.com/NagineFarsad. And oh my gosh, you guys, you're so delightful. We'll be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.